shit.
Blog Talk Radio.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember. Creeping cities, fading by degrees, not believing all I see to be so. I'm flying over backyards, country homes and ranches, watching light between the branches below. And it's hard to say.
Okay, folks, this is Brabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. Today was just the Tornado Turning Heavy Job. I'm coming at you with another edition of the Fightings Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And boy, do we have a show for you. We have the fantasy football draft going on tonight. And, Tony, I didn't know your mama played fantasy football.
Yeah, Mom. She does.
Well, your mama signed up before you. On the list, there's a team called Your Mama.
Oh, I thought it was your mama.
Well, it is. This is on first.
What's funny, we're talking about that the other day, who's on first, and we're like, if you go try on your own, you have problems with our bullpen, and the pitching line, really good. We've got Bugs Bunny cartoons, like, who's on first, Bugs Bunny, who's on second, Bugs Bunny, we're like Bunny Clothes.
Closer, it looks like. Red Sox, they think they're playing football tonight. Gonzalez already given up a touchdown with the 2-point conversion.
He didn't put a lot of credit. He didn't put a lot of credit on lot of unfinished punches. You know, he threw, like, you know, a lot of arm punches and a lot of, you know, quick snaps punches that even if they land, they don't do a lot of damage. But the fact of the matter is, he is putting his fist on Diaz's face. If Diaz was not playing, Diaz is the aggressor, yes, but as you always hear Harold Letterman say, there's a difference between being aggressive and being effectively aggressive. If Diaz was not effective in his aggression, Pelinato used his speed, he used his movement, and I know I was talking to people on after the fight, and they were talking, I saw it on a message board also, about Pelinato being a sore loser, and, you know, because he was pissed off, but you know what, he wasn't a sore loser, and he had every right to be pissed off.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's a very good point, and he was, and Max Kellerman, you know, was trying to, you know, kind of calm him down, but no, he did calm him down, he has a right to be pissed off. I mean, he did the better work. He went to the other guy's hometown, and he wasn't happy when he saw the list of judges. And I know where he's coming from, Rich, because when I was fighting in the college ranks, there was a judge that only would get, he had gotten so bad in his judging that only he would only ever get assigned to shows at Penn State, because the Penn State coach would be the ones making the arrangements for that show. Because this guy was so biased towards Penn State. Now, I didn't say Tim last week when we were talking to him, because I know he's a Penn State player. But this guy, it's like, they need yourself there, Rich, and I'm locked in with your BMI. Well, automatically, if it goes to distance, I win, because he's pulling to lock even. But if the exact same fight happened in your Penn State, you win. The guy used to get out, I'm not going to mention any names here, the guy used to actually get out of his chair in the middle of a round and start cheering for the Penn State fighter.
I like to elbow him sometimes.
Campbell fight.
Right, so, I mean, boxing is potentially trying to police itself a little more so this stuff doesn't happen, and, you know, doesn't mean Paulie's not still right when he says boxing is full of shit, because it is in a lot of ways, but, you know, it's full of greatness too, of course, I don't get me wrong, but, I mean, you got stuff like that happening, and, you know, you're setting this tone for change with this other stuff just happened before this fight, you know, started making waves, and now this fight comes along, and people are just like, what the hell, you know, just when they were doing good. And then, you know, another good piece of news coming out of boxing is Floyd Mayweather's fight. His fight is going to be in theaters now.
Yes, I didn't read that.
I think I'm going to check that out, you know, get the ticket, and see what that experience is like, and do a story on that, because that would be great for boxing.
That's actually a pretty good idea, Rich. I mean, they did the closed circuit in the theaters when we were young. I remember them doing that a couple points, you know, back in the mid-80s. I mean, obviously my dad didn't take me to any of them. I was too young to really appreciate it. I know the one that my dad always talked about going to see was Marvin Hagler, Tony Hearns. You know, and that great point that we were just talking to, you know, Hagler's trainer, Petronelli met a few weeks ago.
Right.
But my dad went to that one, and the only time I ever went to a closed circuit was on the first WrestleMania when I was at the 8 years old. And that feels good on the spectrum. But speaking of Floyd Mayweather, you heard about the situation where his house got raided the other day by the authorities.
Yeah, first I heard right away that they were searching his Rolls Royce, and an associate of his might have been involved in the shooting. Now they went and seized handguns and ammo from his house, which, I mean, I don't know how that happens. well, I guess I do, because, I mean, justifiably, people that are guarding him will probably, you know, should have weapons, you know. They're specialists in their field. They should have permits for those weapons. Too, but they shouldn't be shooting them off in a base camp, because what I heard is a roller rink or something down in Vegas, so I don't know if it's a base camp, although I'm sure that you have them out there. I don't know how many there are. Crystal Palace Skating Rink on Boulder Highway, so it doesn't specify whether it's base or roller skating, but somebody had their wheels and the guns blazing. We don't know what happened, but it doesn't look like Floyd is going to get tied up in it. But it does seem kind of like a Mike Tyson situation almost with Floyd here. Now that we have this situation, we also have Roger getting in trouble for the extracurricular activities there in his rental place. So it kind of makes you think, like, what the hell is going on with this guy, and why is he associating with people like this? Maybe this is why he's broke.
That's the thing. Like, Floyd always wants to play with the band 3 image, and I know he liked it. And if you ever listen to an interview with Floyd when he's just talking normally, Floyd is actually, you can tell he's a genuinely nice human being. And Rich, you know, listening when we did that, listening to that conference call when he was talking about Arturo Gatti after his passing about a month or so ago. And you can tell, you know, Floyd was, you know, very humble in that talk. He was, he didn't try to trash talk. He didn't try to talk down anybody. But when he gets in there, like, he likes to play this role, this bad boy role, and he associates with the wrong kind of people. And it's sad to say, and Rich, I'm going to beat this drum again, as I beat it about every week. His father and his uncle are two of the worst people that he should be hacking around.
Now, this is a kicker on this, Quincy Williams, 24, told police that Mayweather had confronted him inside the business. Mayweather brought a message Williams had sent him. In the message, Williams said he hoped Mayweather would lose, according to the document. So this is directly to Mayweather, so maybe he is directly going to be involved somehow and pay some price for this, because this sounds like they could tie him to some kind of charge anyway. So the communication was made to Mayweather. And when Williams and a friend left the skating rink, they saw Mayweather and two of his associates in the parking lot next to the boxer's Rolls Royce. As the pair drove away, one of the associates pulled a gun and opened fire. So they weren't even in the car. They were just with the car, apparently. Now, you know, doesn't mean Floyd told him to shoot, you know? Maybe the guy just did. Okay, folks, this is Brabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
So it's the tornado turning in again.
Well, it is. Who's on first? Situation is just screwed up right now, I think. You know, he's got that big tax bill. He's obviously paying these guys too much for jeopardizing like that. And, you know, just when things are looking good, he's supposedly patched everything up from his dad, so that was, supposedly everything was good, but, oh well. Anyway, switching over to mixed martial arts real quick, I just wanted to mention before we called Jimmy Birchfield, one of the biggest stories that broke right after our show last week was Frank Fertitta Jr. died. And, it was kind of a more of a West Coast story because, you know, Frank had a lot of connections in California and Vegas, of course. So it didn't really make the papers out this way. Vegas and California were all over it. And the LA Times actually impressed me. It's funny because they had a big story that I read about the corruption of judges in Vegas and how, you know, the elected system of judges was leading to, you know, lawyers giving donations to judges that would, you know, be running for election every year and then getting favoritism in their courtroom, you know, because they gave a big donation to the campaign fund. So, you know, and the LA Times did that report. Now, the LA Times writing about Frank Jr.'s death was the only institution out there, other than Fight News Unlimited, that bothered to mention that he was suspected of skimming in his younger days. You know, of course, nobody really went into the detail that I have with the history of Frank Jr. and, you know, going back to some of the other reports of how the company was passed on to his son, then why? A lot of people forget that, you know, especially when, you know, you're trying to throw all this praise on the guy because he's dead. But, you know, there's more to the story than happiness and sunshine. And ironically enough, he had spent a lot of his last days really devoting himself to God, church, and all that, you know, going to church a lot. Try to atone for something, I guess. And, that's what I hear from somebody who's in the family very well. But anyway, it throws a big wrench in what's going on out there in Vegas, because this whole thing with the UFC, I just wrote a big article about it the other day. Everybody says, oh, you know, this Station Casinos thing is not going to affect the UFC. Well, I think that people are wrong about that, because, you know, the whole reason that Fertitta's were able to invest in the UFC in the first place was because of Station Casinos. They had more money than God. And now that, you know, they're having to shell out all this money for lawyers, and, you know, this case could get very ugly for them, because it seems to me, you know, bottom line is they mismanaged the company to the point where it's now $5.2 billion in debt. And there's all this talk about, well, you know, they'll be fine because they made out on the privatization deal of the Station by, like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So everybody thinks it'll be all right, but these are a whole family of people that are used to spending about $100 million a year. So who knows? I think that time will tell, but... you know, all the help in Vegas is not going to be able to stop this bankruptcy from being very ugly, from what I see. And the interesting thing about Frank Jr.'s death is I think that a lot of the stress associated with the bankruptcy probably didn't help. And we wonder what will happen because now he's gone. So I think that whole barrier of selling, you know, the free and clear property, which is what Frank built, I mean, he was the Palace Station place where OJ got busted out there in Vegas, is his pride and joy. You know, that was the first company he started. So now that he's gone, I think the Suns will be a lot less hesitant to go ahead and sell that off if they have to. So, you know, a lot of interesting things could come out of that. And, you know, as far as how they affect the UFC, we'll have to wait and see. But I kind of used it in my case against Zion to say, hey, listen, you know, Judge, you got to make a decision here. We were supposed to have a hearing with this guy. Was supposed to be available and there for questioning because he ran Fertitta Enterprises, which is the company that the Fertittas used to buy Zion's and then bankrupt. So, he's named an emotion that we're supposed to have a hearing on. The judge hasn't made a decision whether he's going to have that hearing or, you know, just decide on the motion. So we kind of stuck a little thorn in his side and said, let's get going on this. I want my $1 million. Anyway, on other news, we'll put that to rest, no pun intended. But another news I noticed this week, there were a lot of stories about boxers or boxing as a sport becoming like a new fad for other sporting people to train all of a sudden. Ocho Cinco was the big story, of course. He talked about knocking out Andre Berto. And Andre Berto responded to the tune of something like, you know, you're dreaming, buddy. You know, it kind of reminded me that Teddy Atlas, speaking of him a little while ago, he had a big series on the Friday Night Fights about teaching some of the Jets football team some boxing. Then there was a story on women's tennis. This woman won, in 43 minutes she won a match, ranked ninth in the world, this woman, and she was in some big tournament the other day and won her match in 43 minutes, and she credited it to her boxing training. I thought that was kind of funny. And then the most appropriate sport of all, the Thrashers, wherever they're from, I don't know, I don't know if it's a professional team. Is there a Thrashers in the professional NFL?
They were the Atlanta Thrashers. They're a professional hockey team.
Yeah. Yeah, they were the only ones used for an appropriate reason to increase their fight performance.
Well, it's funny you're talking about this, Rich, because I don't see anything on that to me. You can see it tonight, and one guy that he was drafted a couple of years ago, and then they got cut and all, but it seemed to be better. They drafted by the UFC, and offensive line name, Winston Justice, about, 6'5", 320 pounds, a big guy. Well, he had been suspended from UFC for his junior year. I forget the reason, but they said, well, he was suspended to keep in shape. He went to the French Roach's boxing gym in Los Angeles. And he basically boxed for the entire year.
Right.
Just to keep in shape for football season, and he managed to have to learn a new discipline. I had a young kid come over to my house yesterday. His mom worked at the vet where I take my dog, and I happened to, they called me up and asked me to stop in. I don't think, well, my dog didn't have any tests, but I was only stopping in for. They said, no, we keep you on train this kid. He's, you know, going to be 17 years old at the end of the month, and big kid, around 200 pounds, and, you know, he's never adapted to anything else, and he wants to learn some type of athleticism, some type of sport. I mean, how did I go on the team sport? Well, they found me in boxing the way we're gonna try again.
Oh man, I got the 8th pick. That's 8 out of 10, and I started. You got the fifth. Right. Started my draft board here. Before we get started on the draft, we're going to call Jimmy. I told him the latest we call is 8:45, so he's probably chomping up a bit.
He's 21st, he better start dialing.
You know those promoters?
Yes. Jimmy actually promoted a couple of guys from Philadelphia. My friend Hammer, Hank Lundy, you know, within the Gladiator Fifth, we got the last week with, so I know. And of course, you know, what I'm talking about.
Yep.
You're going to get a question later, right? You know that, right?
I'll just, at the end of it, I'll just, you know, remind him that, you know, someday he's going to be signing me to fight. Working out, I tell you. It's, the pounds aren't quite falling off, but there's definitely, you know, some results happening. I feel much better about running, get the bag. I had to fight knowing that you have a loss already. So you have to fight for that no blemish.
One guy, in fact, the guy that stocky, real tough guy. And I remember he told me that about a year or so prior. You know, he had suffered his first loss, it was in 05, and a couple of guys were heckling him, and he got so bent out of shape, he came up and he went after, you know, one of the spectators. And, you know, I was brought to command to that, and he was telling me that first loss and how much it bothered him.
Yeah, I don't know. I lost my first fight pretty quick.
Is that the one that Lord Terry?
No, I was a scrimmage, but I think it was my first competitive fight with a referee. So, technically, yeah, it was my first loss. But I went 3-2, so. I mean, I never had a real undisputed record either to fight for any long period of time. I lost to Bond and to Jordan. That was it.
When I went to Rocky, my first bout with Justin, he was good before he was in our own gym. And he was trying to be so cocky, you know. You know, I found I was better than I was, and I really wasn't that good at all because I was just a glorified kid, whatever. I was at Rock Marciano when he first started, just trying to come in and take everybody's head off. You know, no real technique, and, you know, but I didn't have a stamina, and I had a whole lot of ability skills. And they kind of got stuck, and I'm going to teach these people. Lots of people in there with this guy named Dirk Weaver. He's a 22 or 23-year-old senior, he's all American, really badass of a guy, and he's been pretty good, not doing any ass plays. And I went down there and Dr. Tuckson, I wanted to do a lesson for you. And my first scrimmage of the NBA Academy, the first kid I went to, I stopped him in one round. I got him on the corner and played up for him. But then he put me there with another pretty tough kid, and I hung my arm with him. But definitely got the better
of me. I just got in touch with this kid. he was back in high school, right? This kid, we used to call him Sloth. It was a joke. He looked like the guy from the Goonies, you know. He was a big dude. And ironically enough, his real name was Jim Swim. How would you like that for a name? Hey, Jim Swim, you know? He was a big guy, he talked slow, he was a butt of a lot of jokes, you know, but he was a big, tough guy. So, one day, I don't know how it got started, but somebody was like, you should box him, you know. Yeah, I bet you can beat him. So they got me to box him. And this was like way back in my early boxing days. I just hit the heavy bag every now and then. Never really had more than like one sparring session when I was 15. At a training place down in Dorchester where everybody came through. As young as 5 years old, kids are coming through there. But anyway, make a long story short, Jim Swim and I went over to the Y, right across from the high school, and it was only me and like three other kids that were with us. And I forget if he was older or he was in my grade. I think he was a couple years older. But anyway, however it happened, we're over there at the Y, and we go upstairs, and there's nobody in this room with mats on the floor. So we put the gloves on, and we had a ragtag pair of gloves. One of the pairs I still have, actually. And one set of gloves was thinner than the other one, so we each switched. You know, we each had one hand in the thin glove and one hand in the thicker glove. And I don't even remember which hand I had which glove on, but I did the Mike Tyson's punch-out thing within the first minute of the fight. Just kept hitting him in the temples with each hand. So he caught up with me on Facebook the other day. He goes, my head still hurts from boxing you in the wash. I was like, wow, that's cool. He still remembers that. But he ended up giving up, and I was shocked because, I mean, I was confident in my ability even back then, but I didn't think I was going to beat this guy. You know, my friends put me up to it. You know, I had no animosity against the kid. And I was just like, well, I'll just... hope he's as dumb as he looks.
One of my dad's favorite stories of when my dad was growing up, and it was And then this is pretty much, you know, how I started too. Two kids always funny, they would have some years of club, and they would have like weekend boxing matches, and they'd always have boxing teams. I was like, oh, whatever that was. Thank you. No, not for me.
The hell was that? Pastulo Gonzalez and Mike Oliver.
Yeah, just two players that really don't like each other. It goes back to the days of 1940 when players really fought each other. It didn't matter whether they lived a couple of blocks or next to the other. These two kids said, this is going to be a great fight. This is a fight that actually should be on television because it's the two fighters that want to stay in the center of the ring and just fight with everything that they have. And it's for your titles, actually. It's for the NBA title and the New England championship. So, I think that's just going to be a great, great card.
This is, I'm Tony. I'm the co-host of the show. And,
how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
Very good, thank you.
I'm Rich's Philadelphia connection. We've been doing the show together for about a year and a half now. I go to a lot of the flights in the Philadelphia area, and two of your players, I don't know if it's, one of them still is, promoted by you, Hammer and Hank Lunch.
That's correct.
Yep, Hammer and Hank, and you still work with Willie the Gladiator Gift at all?
No, we don't work with kids, but we surely work with Henry Hank Lundy, which actually looks like one of the top prospects in the world. We're actually having problems. This kid Garcia that fought the other night, which I think is 14-0, 15-0, wouldn't accept it to fight, and they wouldn't accept Hank Lundy. It's good that you were the Philadelphia connection, because we did a fight up there 3 or 4 weeks ago at facility. We had Matt Gottlieb there before. He had a time for the ESPN TV there. It was a great, great card. Actually, there was two great fights there on the night in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so I was supposed to go to that card, but I had a previous engagement. I was with family function that night, taking a bunch of my family to Philadelphia Phillies game. It's becoming a tradition every year at that weekend. And then we found out that Philadelphia, and my dad and I were looking at each other saying, you think we can sell our 2 tickets and send the family off by themselves? And then we said, no, better now. We better go to this one. I was actually, you had a play for down at the New Alhambra a little over a year ago. And,
yes, we did.
I can't remember who the main event was that night. And I know the undercard fight was Kid Chuck Masaccio versus Richard Stewart. Just told me at that point. I actually was one of Chuck's first. He came to Lockhaven University when I was getting ready to graduate there, and I trained him when he was starting as an amateur.
Right.
And
he's a great person, and even though he tells you everything he's done when he does enter the ring.
Yeah, he really does. He's a good kid. I mean, like I said, I took him when he was 17 years old, and I was, in the band to leave the stable at Lockhaven, and being the Italian guy, I kind of took him under my wing as the fellow Italian.
You did a great job with him.
Thank you. He just actually suffered his first loss last week. He lost a 8-round decision down in West Virginia to a real slick southpaw named Tom Carpenti, who was 17-0-1.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, just last Friday.
Okay.
And that's the night that we were discussing last July. It was a night that was great for me, because that was the night I got to meet Vinny Paz in person, because he's been an idol of mine for years.
Oh, my God. Is it given to the day? Because that Vinny and I don't talk. Not only was I his promoter, but for the 5-time world champion. We are friends forever. In fact, we had this fight going down in Clement. We had 2 press conferences today, one in Clement, right in front of the Mayflower. It's just, you had to be there. It was outside. that this clinic has just beautiful. And then we went to Hyannis, we got two fighters that look like the real McCoy, a big heavyweight by the name of Jesse Barbosa, and we had a big press conference in Hyannis, but on my way down traveling from Providence to the Cape, Vinny called me just to ask me if everything was okay, and I would like you guys to know that, you know, it wouldn't hurt anything. Vinny is eligible to go on to the Hall of Fame in 2010. So the whole letter of the Hall of Fame text in that support, the better it would be, and most deservingly, he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know I remember when you retired back in 2004, and after I met him at the flight card last year in July, you know, I gave him one of my business cards with my phone number on and said, hey, we'd like to have you on our show sometime, and, you know, and then I figured we'd have to, you know, maybe go through, mutual friend like John Scully.
Yeah,
but he called me a week later, and we made a deal.
Excuse me. I don't want to interrupt you, but it's amazing. To this day, if Vinny might be away for a couple of weeks, he gets home, he's got maybe a foot high or 2 feet high of mail. He answers every single mail that he gets. It may be for a picture, it may be somebody got a broken neck like he had. And he stands there and he answers every single letter that he gets. We go into a public place and people will ask him for an autograph, and he'll stay there for hours signing autographs. He's an amazing, amazing young person.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, he was very nice when I met him last year at the fight card. And like I said, he called me up to schedule the interview, which was very nice of him. And, we made a deal. He goes, you know, for me to do this interview, because I want you to buy my DVD. And I said, well, it's funny you say that, because I was on the MiniPaz.com website, and I saw the DVD, and I was going to buy it for my father anyway. And
that's strange.
He goes, fine, I'll do the interview. And I did, and I'm glad I did. And I told him when we did the interview, he goes, what do you think? But I said, I loved it. I told him, you know, my dad really loved it, but the part we liked more than anything was surprisingly when you guys had the retirement function for the banquet.
Yes. Yes. It was an amazing, and you know, I try to make it my business that once a week I will look at that DVD, because if you want to get someone motivated and you want to see really what you have to do to be successful in life, you should take a look at that DVD. Also, I don't know if you know, but he's just got a book that's out. And you know, the last fight that we did, I think it was last month, Vinny came and did a signing with the book. I think he took about 250 books, and he sold every single one of them. And there was a line waiting to buy more books. It's a great book that he had beside the DVD.
Yes, and you know what? I do know about the book. I had, you know, I forget if I was on a website or if I, no, you know what? I saw it online the one night. Rich had done a posting. It was the flight card that we're talking about up in Rhode Island. Because I think Hank Lundy fought on that flight card.
Yes, he did. He actually fought the main event.
Yes, and that was because I was reading about Hank's fights, and I saw that, you know, Vinny was doing an autograph signing, and I was going to ask you tonight how I could get a copy of the book. I mean, I'll be happy to, you know, pay for it.
I think if you just go to the CS website, it will give you the information. If not, you just call me directly. You guys have my cell phone, and I'll make sure that you get that.
That'd be awesome. I would love that. And you know what? I think my dad would really love that. My dad, I was starting to get into boxing right around the time Vinny had his first fight with Greg Hogan.
Yeah,
I started really watching it. But my dad, obviously, for years, I mean, he was grew up in the 50s watching Rocky Marciano with his father. So, when my dad would get into a fighter, that's what he, saying, because this is who you got to watch. And I remember him watching the first Greg Hogan fight. And I was lucky enough, I was around 16 years old. My dad took me one of my first fight cards in Atlantic City. It was the night that he knocked out Lloyd Hunnigan in the ninth round.
Oh, yeah.
Then he took me a couple years later because I was boxing at the time as an amateur, and I was just had some pretty serious knee surgery, and I was spirits were kind of down. I couldn't work out, and my dad goes, I want to raise your spirits. And he goes, I'm going to buy you tickets, and he took me to Vinny's first fight with Dan Rosenblatt.
Oh, that's great.
That was a great time.
Yes, it was. Well, I just got to compliment you guys for keeping this boxing magic going on. And Bob Feeger and all has told me that what a great job you guys are doing. I kind of try to tell people, there isn't anything like boxing. If you haven't been to a live boxing match, you need to get there. You need to see the excitement, the charisma. And, it takes some people train all day long and they try to get themselves in shape. But all they can do is go inside a ring and just spar by themselves, not catching any punches or anything. Just keeping their hands up for 3 minutes and see what most people will not be able to make the 3 minutes without catching any punches or anything else.
You're 100% right. I know there are times that I would, after I had left the gym that I was training with Hank Lundy and Willie Gibbs, I had started there after I had already left. Willie and I actually sparred a few times back in the late 90s.
Right.
Because I had moved to Adams City, so I was at a fitness center. And there would be young guys that would come in there, they would try to be tough, and I would only get like an hour or so, a night in the one bathroom with heavy basketball. But I'd always invite guys, and these tough guys would come in there and they were lifting their weights and trying to look all big and bad. And I would say, hit that back for 2 minutes, not even 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and then tell me how bad you are. And then after 50 seconds, and they're danced out. And then, nobody's even punching them in return.
In most sports, in most professional sports, you put a teammate, in basketball, or you can pass the ball over in football, or hockey, or any of those sports. In boxing, you have no teammate. You're all by yourself. It takes a special person. Now, I don't care if you're 0-12 or 12-0, it takes a special human being to get in there as a boxer. Even with the MMA as popular as it is right now, it doesn't really have anything to do with the talents of a boxer. It goes in there, the MMA fighters are 20 feet from each other, then they go down on the canvas, and with boxing, if you give a good boxing show and you get good qualified fighters fighting each other, it's just nothing like it. The young people are listening to your show, and I hope there's thousands and thousands of them to do because you guys are doing a great job. You got to get to a wide professional boxing match. And if you can judge yourself and see what you really think, it's nothing like it in the world.
Oh, and Jimmy, you're 100% right. I was telling a friend of mine, there was a young guy that I grew up with. I've been since we were 7 years old. He knew me when I first started boxing amateur, and he knew that I was more than a fighter, I was a fight fan. You have a lot of these guys, they fight just a fight, but they don't care about the sport. I cared about the sport, so the first fight I ever took him to was just a couple years ago. I took him down to a fight with Arturo Gatti in Atlantic City, and he lost that night to Carlos Baldemir, TKO. But Well, my friend was so excited because there was a great atmosphere, and like the people were saying, gosh, real loud, he was getting into it. But I told him, I said, Mike, I said, if you really want to have a good experience, have a beautiful local show. And I said, a local show, I said, during the big venues in Atlantic City, you're far away from the action, you don't feel like you're part of it. But I took him to a local show, him and his cousin, about a year ago, and we were sitting in like the third row. And they were just, you know, a couple four and a couple six round fights. But one of my old trainers was there with one of his fighters. So they came over and they were talking to my friends. There's a young up and coming fighter now. He's about to fight on HBO in 2 months named Harry York. He just knocked out Tommy Hearns' son.
Right.
He's been in mind for about 5 years. Harry was there, you know, meeting people, signing autographs. He came over, signed autographs for all my friends. You know, and I said, when you go to these local cards, I said, really get to interact with the players. You know, I was at,
people who listen to your show and the boxing people in general, and just sports people in general, wherever a boxing show is, the next time you go and see it, you can judge for yourself really what it's all about. And any boxer that gets into that ring, again, regardless of what their record is, they're very, very, very special people.
So I don't know a gentleman that I trained with for a number of years, Dr. Ken Cox.
Oh, yes.
Okay, Dr. Ken Cox from Lock Haven. I still talk to him. I saw him a few months ago. He's still doing well. But Dr. Cox used to say the same thing. You're the average person. You put them up there and climb the three steps. The blood turns to urine. Climb up them three short little steps, it makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, listen, it's been great talking to you guys, and I don't know if there's any other releases besides these two events. We've got a big cruiserweight, Matt Godfrey fighting in California against Michael Sims in September. We have big Olympian heavyweight, Big Six, Jason Estrada, coming in the New York State Fair on the Chrissy Mottley's card with James McCurry Jr. on that card also. So we're really excited with everything that's happening right now. But the best excitement that we have is that you guys doing what you're doing to your listening audience and keeping boxing alive in your area. And if there's anything in the world that we can do to assist you, we'd be glad to.
If you have any more fights in the Philadelphia area, I mean, I love going to local cards. New Alhambra is only about 45 minutes to an hour from my house.
Yeah, we'll let you know, because there's another Philadelphia fighter that I'm interested in by the name of Tony Ferranti, and we're talking to these people now to see whether we can put something together. So you may be seeing us do some more shows in Philadelphia.
I don't know Tony very well, but I met him on an occasion. I know actually his girlfriend. His girlfriend out of clear blue sky contacted me on a website because she knew I was in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And she's like, we're looking for sparring partners. And I said, she goes, but we're looking for people that are more type boxers, not sluggers. I said, well, you don't want me then. I said, because it's not that much. I'm coming right to the body. I go in there to break ribs.
Yeah.
I like the Marciana style.
Well, I would rather see you stay with the mic and do the job you're doing at the station instead of being in there slugging with some of these guys, because as you know, it can get dangerous in there.
Very much.
Yeah, I'm actually the one making a comeback. I started my comeback up here at the Petronelli Gym a few weeks ago. See, almost a month ago.
Well, you know what, you put you on one of these cards.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely going to want to come to the one in Plymouth. I'm right up here in Abington, Mass., so that's right up my alley.
Well, we just had a great press day here for Plymouth. And, you know, there's a young family by the name of the Wokes. Manuel Antonio Wokes was an undefeated fighter that we have. And his grandfather just passed away about 7 or 8 weeks ago. It was kind of the whole foundation of the Wokes family, but great wear. And Manny actually broke his left hand. Got our private doctor, Dr. Stephen Manos, which is one of the best hand surgeons in the world. He's operated on Mickey Ward's hands, many guys, Paulie Magalhaerty. He's done all the big fighters, and he's operated on Mayo Antonio Wolves. But we're bringing his brother, his young brother, Arturo, which is the same name. He was a big fan of Arturo Gotti. His name is Arthur, but he named himself Arturo Wokes, and he's going to make his pro debut, even though his grandfather, whom he loved so much, only died 8 or 9 days ago on the big Plymouth card, and we're really excited about that. This kid looks like the real deal. He's got a big image career and a very, very exciting fighter coming from a very, very good bloodline.
Yeah, and I'll definitely be in touch when I get closer to being on weight. It looks like I'm going to be aiming for $175 because right now I'm around 195, so I still got about 20 pounds.
We'll get you guys in the ring. We can do a special on the announcing the fight at 20.
That would be nice.
Well, we'll see, guys. I am here in hiatus. And I left my table with my guests at dinner, and they're going to wonder where the heck I am.
Uh-oh.
So if you've got any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them. But if not, I want to get back to my guests here.
I do have one more question. I just wanted to ask, what you think about in light of the Paulie Malignaggi fight this last week, and as an insider in the boxing world, what do you think about the strength of this sport?
I thought Paulie got outright robbed. I think he won the fight. It wasn't even close. It's a scrape, and it's wrong with boxing. It's when a kid puts everything he's got into the ring and loses a fight that he clearly won, it's not good for boxing. It's not good for the boxing fans or anything else.
Well, thanks, Scott. It's been great talking to you, and we'll definitely be in touch.
Listen, stay in touch. God bless you guys. Keep up the great work you're doing. All right, thank you so much.
All right, have a good night. So that was a good interview. Action-packed. 30 minutes long. Perfect. So now we have time to go through the upcoming fights. Of course, we have, like I said, Ashanti Jordan there. That was the first one we mentioned. Let's see, just going down the list here. Joaquin Alphine is fighting in Montreal, Quebec. 30-1, 19 knockouts in the middleweight, 10 rounder versus Eric Mitchell, 22-5 with 11 knockouts.
Eric Mitchell.
He is from Vero Beach, Florida. His birthplace was Philadelphia, though. So,
I know him. What is the train with him? What is he, Dark Murder Mitchell, right?
I don't know. I didn't check that. Well, I just closed the window.
Carter and Aaron Homicide. And we actually, last year when we were talking to Steve Cunningham, was very critical. There were two twin brothers, Aaron and Aaron. And they were really good, like the Pug Life. And they were simple. Like, we actually threw them out of Larry Davis' rec center.
Really?
With attitudes. But Steve Cunningham is a big producer of all images. Eric Murder
there's another 8-round super middleweight fight between David Lemieux, 16-0 with 16 knockouts, versus Vladimir Hernandez, 18-2 with 16 knockouts. Now, talk about being undefeated, but having all your wins by knockout, especially at super middleweight, that's got to even be more pressure. You got to get the knockout. It must be pretty good. Time to make my pick. I'm taking Jeremy Shaw. I didn't realize it. It was when the draft started that it made the first one. And then the time my pick comes up, it makes it a little thing. But, so that's that fight. That's up in Montreal. And then, let's see, where we go. Go to New Zealand for an interesting fight for the interim WBO Asia Pacific Light Heavyweight title, which I think I could fight for someday, just by these guys' records. 12-rounder, light heavyweight, Suklon Poundsebi, 11-0, with 6 knockouts, versus Tolga Silimai Latoa, 11-2, with 6 knockouts. And what should I get now? Kicker or defense? What a wide receiver.
Take the kicker from Detroit.
Donald Driver or Torrey Holt?
Torrey Holt had a touchdown play for Jacksonville. He covered a fumble in the end zone.
Really?
Yeah. Because the other guy knocked unconscious on the 1-yard line.
That's the other. Torrey Holt, I had a pretty good team so far. Pretty proud of myself. Let's see. We go. That's the interim WBO Asia Pacific Light Heavyweight title. Be the best one. And then we have a cruiserweight title, the interim WBO Africa cruiserweight title, in this Auckland, New Zealand fight here.
We got an African title being contested in New Zealand.
Right, along with the WBO Asia Pacific title.
Right.
And, you know, Asia Pacific and heavyweights, it doesn't sound like it makes sense, but both these guys got some weird names. Muhammad Azawi, I guess, 24-5, 2 draws, 8 knockouts, versus Moyoyo Mensa, 19-7, 9 knockouts. That's for the cruiserweight title there. A lot of humdrum fights going on here. But then the big ESPN Friday night fights between Juan Urango and Randall Bailey should be a great fight, as we all remember. Elgato had a vicious knockout that I think, I don't know if he's fought since then, but totally changed his career direction and stopped him outright from fighting again. I don't know, but Randall hit him with a wicked right hand, and Randall's coming in with 35 of his 39 wins coming by knockout, 6 losses, only been knocked out twice, and he's fighting Juan Durango. He's never
fought. I've also had fight live in Reading, PA, on the Bernard Hopkins undercard a number of years ago. Randall Bailey, seeing that play with Elgato was a devastating puncher. I've seen him get stopped while body shot. I've seen him get hurt in other fights. And the thing is, Juan Durango, the only 2 losses of his career,
one is Ricky Hatch.
Andre Berto and Rick Catton, both by decision. Now, Berto's more like a boxer. He went with the speed. But, you know, Hatton, especially early in Hatton's career, hates the 2 guys. And he wasn't able to take Durango out. So I think what the key to the fight is going to be is Durango's chin and durability.
And if you want to watch us, or listen to us and watch boxing at the same time, tune into Versus right now. There's a fight going on coming up between David Rodella and Gamayir Rodriguez. I don't know the records, but I'm just reading on the screen here.
They got an interesting undercard fight on that ESPN fight on that Tavares Cloud. 17-0, 18 knockout. He's playing Football World Championship, Clayton Woods, 42-4-1. I mean, his only stoppage loss was to Roy Jones, and that was back in 2008. I mean, he has a draw, and they lost to Glenn Johnson, and he has a loss to Antonio Tarver. He also has a split decision win, now been, you know, a little controversial over Glenn Johnson.
It's also the Jesus fight of the week, I guess, at welterweight here. 14-1 with 8 knockouts is Jesus Babone. And he's fighting Prentice Brewer, 12-0, with 6 knockouts to round out that card. And then we go to a card put on by Fred's Kez Productions, Fred's Akendo's deal.
Oh, wow. I believe. They're a commercial company out there.
I thought that was one of those, but it says promoter Lenny Fresnes, so maybe I'm wrong. But it's a women's fight on the main event there between, and we have the mismatch of the week as well, but we'll get to that next. The 10x2 welterweight fight between Holly Holm, 24-1 with 7 knockouts, versus Terry Blair, 11-13 with 6 knockouts. So that's not quite the mismatch of the week, but. If Terry Blair wins, of course, he'd be upset. And it's for the WIBA, Women's International Boxing Association, welterweight title. And the mismatch of the week is a little more apparent than the next fight, I think. Super featherweight fight between Frankie Archuleta, 25-7, with 14 knockouts and 1 draw, versus Lorenzo Estrada, 3 wins and 14 losses with 1 draw. Only 1 knockout to his credit, so good luck. You're going to need it, Lorenzo. And we go down to Coroba, Argentina, for a pretty decent fight, guys. Well, it's kind of a mismatch in itself, but we have Francisco Antonio Mora, 55-14 with 35 knockouts, versus Javier Francisco Mejia, 11-1 with 6 knockouts. That's on Saturday. Marco Huck is fighting on Saturday over in Westfalen, Germany. He's 25-1 with 20 knockouts, and he's fighting Victor Emilio Ramirez. He's 15-1 with 12 knockouts. Well, I'm taking your kicker.
Only loss in his career was a stoppage loss in the 12th round, and so it'll play to Steve Cunningham. Interesting. A tough fight and coming in by, you know, broken down late. I also see how Damon Brewster's on the card.
Saying that
Lopez, who's quite a unique president, who was yesterday pointing on Roger Contago, a personal friend of mine, in October. They're saying that they think Lopez is ducking Cavalera. Cavalera's been coming up strong recently. He had a devastating knockout that all goes over Steve Molitor. I mean, he absolutely destroyed him. His last loss was back about 5 years ago, unanimous decision. And he had a stoppage loss back, in three, but other than that, he's been undefeated for 5 years. And they're thinking Lopez won't fight him. And what they're hoping to do with this card in October is go towards a fight with Lopez versus Yurioka Scandola. They're both going to be showcased on that card. But of course, I'm going to my friend Rogers. He's bringing the upset, and I was telling H. Man John Scully today. What was that?
That was a big one.
But I was telling H. Man John Scully and a few others that I said, yeah, Rogers is an underdog, and this guy, he's fighting just 26-0 with 24 knockouts. He needs the next big thing to come out of Puerto Rico. And I know it's going to have a lot of more Puerto Rican fans there, Madison Square Garden, a.k.a. Little Puerto Rico. Well, the thing is, Roger's got a devastating right hand. I mean, I've seen it in the gym. I've seen it sitting in the front row when he fought this Mexican fighter named Francisco Trejo about 3 or 4 years ago, and I thought he was killed the guy with one right hand. And what's the best punch against a southpaw is a straight right. Well, you never know. Because he's very aggressive. He's going to come in wide open. You never know.
Right. Yeah, and it's definitely kind of funny, this title. I don't know if it's a mistake, but it says the WBA Super World Super Bantamweight title is more. Whatever the Super World Super Bantamweight title is. And the IBF Super Bantamweight title in that Caballero fight.
So you think of these titles as they go along now, so you don't know what's real and what's not. You know, back in the day, they had the title, but that might not be. The WBA, they've done super shit before. They would say, oh, God, the super champion. The champion. Oh, really?
Okay, I'm taking the Patriots D. Patriots D is mine. The only Patriots player I have other than the kicker. Did you believe that? I wanted Randy Moss, but somebody took him already. I don't know.
I don't even know what I'm going to do. I'm not even going to do it. I'm taking a look. We've got here other cards in the U.S. on Saturday, but Carl Daniels is still fighting. Derek Edwards, who's a 24-0 with 12 knockouts. Carl Daniels, who at one time was a world champion back in the mid-90s, recently lost to our friend Chuck Masaccio. So 15-17. They're fighting that in North Carolina. I'm looking to see if I know anybody else in that card. I do not.
He's fighting Derek Edwards, who's 24-0, so.
It's 12 knockouts.
Yeah.
An ABA super featherweight title. We got a card down in Texas with another Jesus fight of the week. Jesus Soto Carras versus Edman Dos Santos Barros. We got Carras 23-3, 3 draws, 16 knockouts. We got Dos Santos Barros 10-6, 1 draw, 7 knockouts. But that also looks like it's a small card. I mean, mostly 4 and 6 round fights with, 10-round co-main events. Jalen El Garcia looks pretty interesting, 16-0 with 13 knockouts. He's going to get Carlos Rivera, who's 16-3-2 with 5 knockouts. Dakota Washington, we've got Tim Clayton, who's a 6'5 middleweight. He's 25-3 with 3 knockouts. 19-5-1 with 6 knockouts. Don't know anybody else on that card. And down in Honolulu, Hawaii, we got the Hawaiian Punch. Ryan Lavaria is a 108-pounder. He's 25-2, 15 knockouts. Another chance to fight the week. He's fighting Jesus Uribe. He fights 5 draws,
nine knockouts.
Yeah, a little bit. We also get a card in South Carolina, which everybody is fighting the dangerous TBA.
TBA, yes. I saw that.
Yeah. Calling in Mississippi, don't know any of the guys in the main event.
Did you say the South Carolina TBA one?
Yeah, that's in South Carolina TBA one.
Well, you should mention the one guy on one side of it that's worth mentioning who's fighting the TBA. Travis Sims, who's middleweight, 27-1 with 20 KOs.
Yeah,
that one. And I don't know if you mentioned the one before that with Brian Deloria.
I did. Hawaiian Punch.
Okay, because that was actually the first fight I ever wrote about. Besides. Yeah, I guess so. He fought Mighty Mouse Aiken. Aiken, forget the guy's first name, but he fought the Mighty Mouse and made him piss his own blood. Brian Deloria, the first fight I ever wrote about for the internet. I did write about some fights that happened at BMI, which was kind of comical, writing about my own fights.
I always have, two philosophies. Dr. Cox, wanted me to do the writing, but I had to cover my own fights. The whole time he wanted the interview done. About me, I need to be myself. Well, I don't know if I've got any tough questions.
There you go.
Those are also a card in Mississippi. Orlando Guerrero, main event. He's another interesting fighter coming up at 14-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Chris Archer, 11-7 with 7 knockouts. Also on the card, fighting only a 6-round fight. It's a Chaz Willis from that Philadelphia, so he's trying to really build big in his career after his loss to Chris Arreola last year. And Chaz has only had 2 fights since that, both stoppage wins. He is now 25-1, 17 knockouts. He's fighting Stacey Frazier, who I believe is no relation to Smokin' Joe. In fact, I'm sure he's no relation to Smokin' Joe. He's 14-5, 13 knockouts. And he also is on a 2-point losing streak with my stoppage. And if there's anything else on that card worth even mentioning, there's one in Virginia. Nothing really big on that card.
We're going to go to Cleveland. To watch Hector Camacho Jr. You don't want to talk about Hector Camacho Jr. versus Israel Cardona? What date? Saturday?
I can't remember that one.
The Wolstein Center? I don't think we talked about that one.
No, we couldn't have. How the hell did I pass it?
Hector Camacho Jr., light middleweight, is 48-3 with 1 draw and 27 knockouts. And he's fighting Israel Pito Cardona, who that John Wilkes Booth guy was trying to hook us up with, John Wilkinson. Never really did. I think he gave me his number at some point, but I haven't followed up with him. But anyway, Cardona is 36-9 with 28 knockouts. And it's for the vacant, get ready for this, WBC, Caribbean Boxing Federation, like middleweight title. Also, a light heavyweight match between Ronald Johnson, 10-1, and Billy Bailey, 9-4. And that's for the vacant World Boxing Foundation light heavyweight title and the WBC UFNBC light heavyweight title.
Thank you.
Hinkley brothers are on the card. They're Derek Hinkley, Tyler Hinkley. Main event is Jeremy Gilbert in first place since losing to Jesse Brinkley back in February of this year. He's fighting Yvonne Stovall. Jeremy is 17-2 with 13 knockouts. Stovall is 10-4 with 7 knockouts.
Interesting. I know that there was news a little while back that Joey had started his own law firm. So that was interesting. He had just become a lawyer, so he didn't waste any time. Started his own firm, and now he's got to get back to boxing. So that's definitely interesting. We'll see what happens. I don't know if he's going to be in the kind of shape that he was before, and, you know, still having the same goals as he did before, or whether he's just doing it for, you know, just to keep himself in shape and keep the career going and the money coming in, but we'll see. I don't think he's involved in bankruptcy law out there in Nevada, so he's probably not doing as good as those guys are. Bankruptcy lawyers are cleaning up out there. Stacey Casino's case, I read that they're making somewhere between like $200 an hour and $995 an hour. Can you imagine that? That's my partners. That's what they get, $995 an hour. It's like, I mean, come on, why don't you just add the extra $5? It's $1,000 an hour. why not just be real? And, that card, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think that whole Fallon Nevada card is the one. It's Fallon Nevada. I don't know if they ever do any other thing in Fallon Nevada, but I just put up a link in the Combat Sports links. I think it was yesterday or the day before that's going to be a mixed MMA and boxing card, thanks to another friend of ours, the Lane brothers we had on the show before, or at least on a podcast, and we're big fans of theirs, and of course, Mills Lane, still kicking, he's still suffering the effects of a stroke he had a little while back, but the Lane brothers are carrying on this dream with Let's Get It On Promotions, and thanks to the Shamrock family, or at least Ken Shamrock, the oldest one there. Actually going to have a mixed MMA and boxing card up there in Fallon, Nevada. I'm not sure if he's fighting in the MMA fights, but it should be interesting. I hope I get to see some clips somewhere, how that works out, or read some stories or something. But then we go to Sunday in Japan. We have Nobuhiro Ishida, 20-5. 7 knockouts versus Marco Antonio Avendano, 27-6 with 19 knockouts for the interim WBA World Middleweight title. Interesting. And then actually we go to the Jimmy Birchfield fight. Christy Martin headlining. Lou Duva's favorite fighter. No joke, although I think he was joking. But he said it like he was serious. Christy Martin is his favorite fighter. He thinks she's the best fighter, male or female, out there today. And says, 10 division, whatever that means, 10 rounds in her division, which there's a vacant WBC female light middleweight title on the line, so I would guess the division was light middleweight. Christie's 48-5 with 31 knockouts, and she's fighting Dakota Stone, who's 9-7 with only one knockout and 5 draws. And, tend to maybe think that's the mismatch of the week. But with these women fighters, you know, you can't really go by some of these records. Because a woman might look like she's got a bad record, but then again, you know, there's so many really good women out there who, these girls have to fight because there's nobody else there. And they stack up the losses because of it. So I don't know if this is the case with Dakota, but, there's not that much for matchmaking there when you've only got maybe 20 different fight out there, period, in some situations. And actually, she fought and beat one of our original guests and interviewees, Debbie Nguyen, way back when I was at the MySpace page. It was her last fight. It was Dakota Stone, and she won. But before that, she's lost to a couple undefeated fighters, Giselle Salandi and Natasha Rybacina. So she's no pushover, that's for sure. Also lost to a 9-0 fighter, Rybacina again, actually. An 8-0 fighter and a 13-5 fighter. And then their first loss was to a 1-0 fighter. She's got 5 draws. That's a lot for such a young career. So, the way the cookie crumbles, I guess. Also on that card, Jason Estrada, 15-2, versus Zori Lawrence, 24-14, at heavyweight. That's going to be an interesting fight. And Buddy McGirt Jr., James McGirt Jr., 20-2 with 9 knockouts at super middleweight, versus Anthony Pietrantonio, 6-2. So I don't think that's going to be much of a stretch for Buddy Jr. Check out what's going on in the MMA world. The draft is done. And, you're not what?
I really didn't pay attention, which is my fault. I got Dallas players in one of the first 3 rounds.
Did you get Michael Vick?
I got Darius Barber. I hate Dallas.
Yeah. Well, Marion Barber is in one of my favorite of all time fantasy football commercials, actually, I think.
I don't care what team
he played for. Jason Cowboys. Hey, that's what trades are for.
Trade me. Leave me off, or I'll trade for shit. Not alone.
Well, the worst running back that I have, I guess you could say, would be Ricky Williams from Miami. You want him?
Yeah.
Ricky Williams?
It was a great Halloween costume years ago. That was my costume in 04 with Michael Vick of 07.
You have Rasta hair and a big joint in your hand?
Yes, I did.
So another football player has had some bad past. Trouble with, well, a little less heinous than Michael Vick, of course, his troubles. I got Chad Ochocinco, too. So, I got the boxer on my team. I got Peyton Manning, Ladainian Tomlinson, Ronnie Brown, Thomas Jones, Hines Ward, Jeremy Shockey, Patriots D, Steven Gostkowski, Jonathan Stewart, Ted Ginn Jr., Torrey Holt, and here's one that you probably want. David Akers. Got your ticker. Ricky Williams, Heath Miller, and Jason Eagle. So I did pretty well for myself. I was on the ball. That's because you were talking to Jimmy while I was drafting.
Sorry, I
think
they mentioned I was.
Oh. Ouch. We have on the 27th, which is it today? Today the 27th?
Yep.
Tonight, we have Chuto Brazil 13 in Ceará, Brazil, at the Paulo Sarasate Gymnasium, if you're in that neck of the woods. Go down there. Check that out. We have M1 Breakthrough going on tomorrow at Memorial Hall in Kansas City, Missouri. Muhammad Lawal, King Mo, they call him, versus Mark Kerr, Carl Anuso versus John Doyle, Lucio Linhares versus Mikhail Zayas, Rob Burlington versus Jesse Gibbs, Lloyd Marshbanks versus Michael Kidd, Infrared Kida versus Daisuke Nakamura. Regent Lorette versus Alexei Ledick. Eric Marriott versus Tim Baser. Sean Wilson versus Josh Barocho. Reed Beers versus Brendan Seguin. Molly Ailis Estes versus Andrea Kaplan in the cleanup. And then we have, obviously, the biggest events. On Saturday, UFC 102, Randy Couture is coming back. So we'll have a lot to talk about next week as far as that fight goes. We'll see if Randy's got it. I know that Eddie White had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder when he threw Randy to the wolves against Brock Lesnar right away when he finally accepted him back into the UFC. And I think this fight is more of a tune-up fight for Randy than Brock, of course. And it might be a tune-up fight for Brock again sometime down the line, because I heard in an interview that Randy would like to fight Brock again, and I don't know if it's worth watching, but we'll see if it happens. And he's first going to see Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, who's no slouch. And they're both ranked pretty similar. Randy's number 6, and Nogueira's number 5, according to Sherdog. This is going to be at the Rose Garden Arena in Portland, Oregon, if you're up in that area. Also in the car. What? You're not going to be in Oregon?
I shot it. Well, we took a
kiss. You know you're going to make the trip. You're a closet MMA junkie, you know it.
Yeah.
But anyway. Keith Jardine is fighting Thiago Silva. Should be a pretty crazy fight. I know both guys seen Thiago Silva in action. I have not seen Keith Jardine as far as in person, anyway. I didn't see it. I think Thiago Silva fought at UFC 77, if I remember correctly. They won the UFC that I went to. Keith Jardine is known for his fight with Chuck Liddell, his last fight. It was a pretty decent fight. Chris Lieben versus Jake Rochelt, Nate Marquardt versus Demian Maia, Ryan Vera versus Christoph Sosniski, and our hometown guy here, Gabriel Gonzaga, who did an interview with at a Massachusetts event one time. He's just kind of hanging out in the crowd, and somebody's like, "Yeah, that's Gabriel Gonzaga over there." And I go, "No, he's not." And I go up to Gabriel Gonzaga and goes, "That kid over there says you're Gabriel Gonzaga." He goes, "I am." I'm like, "Oh, shit." And so I interviewed him backstage at that event. He's a good guy, very unassuming. And he's right here from Massachusetts. He trained in Massachusetts. Obviously, I think he's from Brazil or something, but originally. But he trains here in Massachusetts with a guy named Marco Albon. And I think he's actually involved in one of the streaming companies. I don't know if it's Fight Zone or some other company. Anyway. Gonzaga is back in action. The first time in a long time, he's fighting Chris Tucherer. Ed Herman is going to be fighting Aaron Simpson, Michael Russo versus Justin McCulley, Todd Duffy versus Tim Haig, Mark Munoz versus Nick Catone, and Marcus Aurelio versus Evan Dunning. And also in UFC news this week, it wasn't really talked about too much, but there's chatter about them merging the UFC and the WBC, which I think, I don't know if that would be a good idea, but it would be a big shakeup in the business if that did happen. I don't know about how that would work. It's kind of interesting dynamic, I think, the way it is now, where you have, you know, the two different channels. You know, Spike is reserved for UFC and Ultimate Fighter shows and all that stuff, and then Versus is where you see the WEC, so I don't know how they'd work out those TV contracts, or what would happen there, but I think that would be the first thing that I think people would notice, whatever they do with that. Is they're going to have them all on the same card, or what's going to happen? Because it seems already they have a lot of fights on these cards, and these guys don't get to fight all that often, so add all these other slots, and and you still have the same amount of fights on every card, that's only going to get worse. And they might lose people to companies like Strikeforce and some of the smaller ones. These guys don't get an opportunity to fight, you know, no matter how much they pay them. They're only fighting once a year. Is it worth it?
Right.
So, see what happens there. Also this weekend, on Saturday, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. We have a Gladiator Challenge in San Bernardino, California, the American Sports University. And Win Fight and Entertainment 4 in Salvador, Bahia, Brazil, at the Fiesta Bahia Hotel. And NAFS, Rock and Rumble 3, North American Allied Fight Series, in Nautica Pavilion, Cleveland, Ohio. And we do have a fight card for that one. Jeff Monson versus Tony Sylvester. Josh Hendricks versus Joe McCall. Nick Sword versus Frank Caraballo. John Fields versus Chris Lozano. McHughes versus AJ Pulling on that whole card. It's interesting, Jeff Monson is fighting again. Because I don't know if you heard, but he finally had to bite the bullet on that charge for spray painting the anarchy sign on the, I think it was the Washington Monument or something. I don't know, something. And it took away his passport. He was supposed to have a couple overseas fights, so I guess he's confined to the United States. But he famously told the judge, you know, are you going to feed my kids? He took his passport away. He's 31-8, been around a long time. And worthy of a main event on any card, of course. And he's on a hell of a win streak. He's won his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 fights. And beat our old guest, Roy Nelson.
Yep.
Back in March this year. Pretty good fighter, all around. Also, King of Combat 7, Judgment Day, down in Austin, Texas. Hopefully the card won't be judged by the same people at the last boxing match in Texas. We won't have any riots. Could be the Austin Music Hall. That's about it. Sure Dog's got a new system here, so I don't know if there is anything else that doesn't show it here. So the big fights are obviously going to be the UFC, which I will, as always, do my best to watch absolutely free. We've got a few minutes left here. I don't know if there's any other big boxing news worth mentioning, mixed martial arts news. We pretty much got it covered. Looking forward to the fantasy football season. Now that everything's all drafted.
Yep, all the work. I had to lay off. I was back in my other fantasy football. It was $50 a year for registration. $400. You know, it's nice. But I run a league where I'm like, it's a $300 payout every week. Not a fantasy football league, it's a weekly intro team league at $85 a year for the year. I've been running 9 years to do my old job. And these people are trying to, like, tell me what trade this is. Is that a fantasy league? I'm like, no, no. Fish to fry. So I'm just living and having some fun. Oh, God. I mean, you know, this baseball league, and, like, if you're such a bunch of guys, you're going to make big trades, like, until you just get tired of it. So, you know, it's nature. He got mercy, but power and strength to tell you. I'm taking some of the Latinian problems and what's funny. You know, I'm not sure if it's worth it. It's my second or third round pick. What else are you looking for a part of them? I said something of real value. AKA second or third round pick. To be honest with you,
I'm surprised that the Latinian Tomlinson didn't go very early on any.
I got him in pick number 12. No, I think I even got him
into that. I got him tonight, but I had an auto draft in another league where I got him as well.
But
it was pretty surprising. You know, I had Michael Turner last year. I got lucky enough to have him, and nobody knew he was coming. And he had a great year. And Adrian Peterson seems to get ranked 1, 2, or 3 every year for some reason.
Oh, cool.
I don't like him. I don't think
he's great. Yeah, he's ranked number one. He's come off like a banged up season. But 2 years, he's still up.
Before this play, I was like, oh my God, you're crazy. but he won the fight, so that is the secret. We didn't have pre tests back then. They're on campus fights, but man, yeah, it's one of those drugs that the side effects. Actually, the side effects on Ritalin I thought weren't that bad, but you could never sleep on it. That was the thing. I mean, you were so. If you didn't have ADD, it was even worse because you take one of those and you just cannot sleep at all. You can try, but it can't happen. But anyway, that's a good site to check out. Demand Studios, D-A-M-A-N-D. Studios.com, and they don't have a quota or anything like that, so you can do one article at a time, whatever. And you fill out your W-9 on there all on the computer. It's pretty cool. Any other freelance writers out there, editors, check it out.
Yeah.